Whole Chattahoochee Valley in Columbus, Georgia. This is Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese, and this is the second Sunday of the year, January the 14th, 2017. I hope that you are having an awesome year so far, and I tell you what excitement we had earlier this week with the Georgia versus Bama game. I know a lot of people are disappointed about the results, and a lot of people that are excited about the results. Either way, we saw a very good game, a very athletic game, and a game with a few surprises. I tell you, to put in a freshman quarterback that hadn't seen 40 snaps all year, and for him to turn around and win a game like that was something huge. But we're going to continue on with our Sunday conversations and trying to bring you as a community as much information as possible, as timely as possible, as relevant as possible. So I am delighted to have with me today one of our returning guests, and you know, someone that I admire for her leadership and what she's done for the community. Our wonderful mayor, Mayor Teresa Tomlinson, is with us today.
Thanks, Teddy.
How you doing?
Good.
Awesome. And we also have with us Major Freddie Blackman. He's over the Office of Professional Standards with the Columbus Police Department. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, Teddy.
Well, awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking time out to be with us today. And I'll start off with the mayor here with our conversation. Mayor Tomlinson, wow.
Yeah.
Around this time next year, you'll be getting ready to hand over the keys to City Hall.
I am almost a lame duck.
Almost a lame duck.
I don't know if your listeners can hear the smile on my face, but that's it's been a wonderful ride. But it's like anything in life, you know, when you've sort of run the race and you've crossed the finish line, you're proud of what you've done. It's time to move on.
Well,
you know, I'm excited. I'm excited about it. And
are you sad?
Yeah. You know, I mean, there are some things that come down the pike, and I think, wow, we could do this if we get started. And then I know, of course, I'll never see it,
right,
even remotely come to fruition.
Right.
But might as well, I'm not going to sit down during this time. I mean,
right,
it's really too critical of a time in our community's history. And so as opportunities come up, I take those opportunities and at least start the ball rolling. And hopefully the next mayor will pick it up and continue to do great, great things.
Well, awesome. Well, it seems that the mayor office is certainly drumming up some interest. I know right now we have at least four candidates that have expressed some interest in that office. But over the next year, should we see any major changes from the mayor's office or any initiatives that you want to try to accomplish within that year time
frame? Well, the big thing is now, you know, one of the things that I ran on, Teddy, was actually the fact that we had to turn blight around.
Mm-hmm.
And that was obviously a 30 or 40 year situation that brought us to the point of where we were.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take some time. We've actually done a lot of foundational, structural, infrastructure things to really ready ourselves, and now we start to see a little bit of the substance coming in. And so I think you're going to see us do some ribbon cuttings and some groundbreakings in the South Columbus area and some of those blighted areas that we
mm-hmm.
talked about,
mm-hmm.
Reaching in with more of our programs that took time to set up and fund over this sort of long recessionary climb out of the recessionary era that we had. And so this year actually will probably be a very busy year. And I hope to set, it's like with any leader, you hope to set a pace, you hope to set progress, that it's hard to put that toothpaste back in the tube.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's really, and it's like with one of my big goals was to allow people to have access to their government, right?
Right.
Through the Let's Talk with
right.
the Mayor, making
mm-hmm.
the mayor accessible.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want, if the next mayor tries to go in a hole and hide, I want you and I want others to say, where is that mayor?
You know? Oh, Mayor, let's back up. I don't want anybody saying Teddy and Mayor Tomlinson on the radio starting trouble.
That's
so,
right. That's
but,
right.
But I will have to honestly say you have set a new standard, and with your level of participation and activity and showing up at events where, you know, historically I wasn't here prior with any other mayor. I'm only going off what, you know, I've been told by community leaders and stakeholders, those that have sat down with me and shared some history about Columbus and the growth and movement here. But you have truly set a new standard that I think people will be looking for in the next mayoral candidate, one that will not be afraid to address and embrace all communities,
right,
which I have seen from you. I'm not just here today to toot your horn. You know, you and I, we've had our
sure.
challenges, our
yeah.
differences, but you know, where I have a foundation and believe in acknowledging great things when I see it.
Mm-hmm.
And and that I don't think anyone can take from you. You've definitely been out there. Whether people wanted to hear what you had to say or not, at least you showed up.
Sure.
And that's respect.
True. And talk about the tough, I mean, look, being a community, it's like being in a great marriage. There's times you got to talk about some tough things, right?
Marriage, my
money, and, you know, kids and discipline and all. I mean, there's all sorts of things you got to talk about. And we're going to be a community. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to talk about tough things and hear tough messages both ways.
Both ways.
And, and so that was one of the things that I did want to say is that it's not just sending out these political surrogates, but the mayor sitting there having to hear this.
And, you know, and I can tell you over the years in which I've been here, I've heard you say some things that just have stuck with me. A new one today was the toothpaste in the tube. But you know, I've heard you say before, you know, it butters everyone's bread.
Yeah.
And that it the tide that floats all boats.
Yeah.
You know, and so there have just been some sayings that I think will stick with me. But they're great illustrators as to what you're trying to convey with the information that you're sharing. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the Liberty District. I am very excited about the efforts that's coming out of City Manager Isaiah Hughley's office,
yes,
as well as the Planning Department on how we move the Liberty District forward. And I'm bringing this to you because you were very instrumental with Midtown, in which,
yes,
I now sit on the Midtown board, and I love it.
Okay.
We are doing so much, and it's so great. So you left a great foundation there. But, you know, during the earlier stages, and for the community that's listening and wants to see the Liberty District prosper and grow, what are some tips you can offer from your experience with Midtown prior to becoming mayor to help really get that off the ground?
Right. Well, I'll tell you one thing, of course, as you well know, initially I was very involved in the Liberty District, mm-hmm, as mayor, right? Mm-hmm. And because of that positive experience with Midtown. And we all know that one of the biggest brouhahas of my entire two terms as mayor was related to the Liberty District. And what the city manager and I and other stakeholders realized was by putting an elected official in there like, mm-hmm, that, it just allows for a very difficult subject and process to have injected into it politics and, mm-hmm, motives and, you know, why is somebody doing all this? And so it really just seemed natural for the city manager and the department head to then step in and lead that. Let's, mm-hmm, try to take as much of the, quote, politics is in everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
But let's take as much of that out of there as we can. So I've always been extraordinarily interested and remain interested in quote, involved as far as lending my shoulder to the wheel of getting something done in the Liberty District. But you are seeing it now, those stakeholders coming in and realizing that the plan they had 20 years ago is not enough to carry them across the finish line. We have got to get another plan, a more intensive and phased plan like we have with City Village, like, mm-hmm, we have with Midtown, and have to start making the tough decisions to implement it. So the Liberty District, much like we saw the resurrection of Kaplan, which is going to be going great places,
right,
like we saw with Midtown and you're going to be seeing with City Village, Liberty District is coming, and it's coming right on the heels of that thing. And tough. I mean, you know, we've been having the MLK events there these past several years. They've been outstanding events and just show you what huge community festivals and sort of that vibe can be like in that awesome district.
Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. So let's change gears here a little bit. You know, I'm a part of the younger generation. So, of course, all of my life centers around social media.
Yes.
There's been a lot of conversations on social media lately in regards to actually policing in the city.
Right.
One of those topics being the location of roadblocks and what particular communities they impact. Now, I know we asked Major Freddie Blackman to be here with us today as well so that we could really dive into that conversation. What would be your response to those who question where roadblocks are placed in the community?
Right. Well, one of the reasons, and I'm going to kick it over to Freddie for this. He's here. He's the expert in all of it. But I got to tell you, policing is so essential to what we do as, mm-hmm, a community. And we all have seen the lack of trust nationally coming from the community, coming from the policing community, from the folks in the street. We cannot have that in Columbus. And so when there's questions, when people think there's bad motives, bad process, we have to get out there and tell the truth. People can still say that truth ain't good enough for me. I reject it. I don't like it. That's fine. That's where you can start a conversation. But if we can't can't grab the truth and start the discussion from there, then obviously we're just spinning our wheels. So I do want Freddie to talk about the roadblocks. I do want to say one thing he probably won't say is colloquially or informally, as I will say, no police officer sets up his own roadblock, period.
Right.
No, none of them. And so it is a thing that comes down from command staff. It is a big plan. There's specific places, and he'll tell you about that process. So, you know, one thing that I think would freak...
And if I recall correctly, yeah. Roadblocks have to have a purpose, right?
Absolutely,
yeah. I mean, the Supreme Court ruled that you can't arbitrarily set up police cars and just stop people. You have to have a meaning behind it. So maybe Major Freddie Blackman would touch on some of those reasonings. And, you know, specifically with some that we saw over the holiday seasons that really touched a lot of people's nerves. And you know, we've heard the safety aspect of it and the need to patrol the community. But, you know, let's talk to the community here and really explain why, you know, this is critical. And why we shouldn't be looking at it in a negative way. Those that are looking at it in a negative way, help them understand, because one thing that we can't deny is that concern exists in the community, and people have a right to address issues and bring up questions and desire answers for those questions.
Right, you're exactly right, Teddy. And let me, before I answer that question, mm-hmm. let me just lay a little foundation about our police department here.
Okay.
Because some of our citizens may know and some may not know mm-hmm. that our police department is an accredited police agency. We are accredited through the CLEA, that's the Commission on Accreditation for Law Enforcement Agency. That's a nationally recognized accrediting body. Now, this commission is associated with the International Association of Chiefs of Police, IACP, the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, which is referred as NOBLE, and also the Police Executive Research Forum. So what happens is that CLEA gathers standards that are considered best practices mm-hmm. for law enforcement. And so our agency operates by these standard operating procedures. And we have written documentation to prove that we operate by these procedures. And so this accreditation involves, and I know it's detailed, I know mm-hmm. our time is limited today, but just very quickly, I'll say that what happens with accreditation is, in order to be recertified, in which we have been accredited since 1993, and have been recertified on each recertification period, evaluation period thereafter. So we are evaluated now every 4 years, mm-hmm. but each year, our department must show that we are meeting the standards.
And that's fine. And Major okay. Blackman, I certainly understand that. And but I just want to, real quick, before you jump off this topic and go to answering my first question, best practices, you know, it, regardless of whatever industry it may be, best practices are really general recommendations that may work generally for most people. But we know different areas have different challenges. Can you confirm or at least talk about some of the adjustments that may be made to these best practices to fit the particular need of Columbus? Are we making any adjustments, or are we just implementing what's being done nationally?
Well, when we say best practices, mm-hmm. we're saying what is typical as far as for the diverse community that we police within.
Mm-hmm.
What's a general best practice for police work? For example, and this constantly changes now.
Mm-hmm.
When you said, are we making any adjustments? For example, when I started in law enforcement 32 years ago, body cameras was no such thing.
I mean, 32 years ago, we didn't have cell phones either.
Exactly. But what I'm saying is that's one, just one example.
Right.
Like I said, our time is limited today, mm-hmm. but that's just one example. I will say that as far as some recommendations that will come out of accreditation standards. Another point is, for example, complaint procedures. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, when individuals want to file a complaint against any law enforcement officer, the Office of Professional Standards, which is the office that I supervise, I manage, we receive complaints, whether it's from an anonymous means or directly from the individual who wants to state their name, and we receive the complaint over the phone, through mail, over the email, mm-hmm. whatever it means, we will receive that complaint, and there are certain standards and guidelines that we must follow in order to be compliant with the CLEA standards,
right.
In order to adequately address the complaint. For example, when an individual files a complaint, there's a protocol that must be followed. We will receive that complaint, and then the supervisor will investigate it, talk to all witnesses that are involved, and then make a decision as to the disposition of the complaint, and then respond back to the complaining party. Again, when I started 32 years ago, that was not necessarily the procedure handling. There was no systematic way of handling complaints. But to answer your question concerning roadblocks, and you and the mayor touched on it, see, roadblocks must take place when there's a law enforcement purpose.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we recently set up roadblocks during our recent holiday season. And this was as a result of citizens complaining about certain activity that was taking place,
mm-hmm.
Violations that were taking place. We received information regarding traffic volume, as well as our analysts were able to analyze data regarding vehicle accidents. So we know that in order to focus on decreasing DUI or impaired driving during this period of time, which we generally receive an influx of traffic fatalities,
mm-hmm.
then it was our responsibility to do something to try to decrease that number from occurring.
Right.
For example, the state reported, in the state of Georgia, it was reported that there were 20 fatalities that occurred during this past holiday period. In Columbus, Georgia, there were no fatalities that occurred.
Thank God for that.
Yeah.
And we definitely do. Thank God for that. But so we set up roadblocks, not at any particularly random situation, random location, but there are guidelines that must be followed. First of all, to set up a roadblock, planning must take place. As far as a supervisor must supervise the roadblock,
mm-hmm.
The command staff will, from the chief all the way down to that supervisor, will approve it. So first of all, the roadblock must be approved. No one officer can go out and set up a roadblock just because. That's against the law.
Right.
Okay.
And taking the arbitrariness out of it, mm-hmm. should give people a little bit of solace. It's always going to be a concern, obviously, policing every community. But I think Freddie's point is, when you know how much goes into it, it's just not arbitrary. And, you know, on that particular night Freddie's talking about, we had four roadblocks, Miller Road, Milgen Road, Casita, and another road. And that was, again, based on the data, you know, the traffic data, the incident data, and so forth. And so, complain or have a complaint about how something went, but know that it was, you know, none of it is ever arbitrary. And interestingly, we do keep statistics, and when you look at some of the enforcements we were doing during the period, the interesting thing is the vast majority of tickets are actually, quote, I don't like to talk about this, but everybody always casts it like this, north side, south side, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are on the north side of town because of the volume, the traffic volume, a lot of times.
And that's what the bulk of the businesses are,
right.
too.
You know, so when people you're talking about the bars and the restaurants, and so the bulk of our, you know, when you look at citations and citation history, they're coming from, you know, the north side of town, they're coming from,
Have we analyzed that based on address?
We've gotten based on roads.
We've gotten based on roads, okay.
We have, prior to doing the checkpoint, we actually did the detail where officers were assigned during the holiday period to focus on reducing drivers that were out driving impaired, DUI. And so our...
Well, I think you would agree that the purpose of that is to reduce it, right?
Exactly.
So in addition to the roadblock enforcement, I guess, you know, from some of the accounts that I read, more people were concerned, too, with the I guess, how they popped up and just they were just there. And I know, you know, from practicing law, we know when you get to court, it's rare you have a gotcha moment. You know what the witness is going to say. You know what evidence is going to be produced. You know, are there any methods or standards or best practices where the law enforcement entity communicates with the community and say, hey, we know this season is coming up. You know, the chief of police on TV or something saying, hey, let's not drive drunk.
Oh,
you know,
we've been doing that. Let me just tell you, if I've said that 1,000 times over at the Let's Talk with the mayor, we said it at council, we say it
when I'm on
radio shows like this, I say, you know, it, you know, take Uber, call a cab, but for God's sake, we even have a car that we take out into the community at festivals and events, and particularly in this time of the year, that's on one side it's a cab and on the other side it's a police car, and it says, which side do you want to get in? And so we do a lot of that. Of course, if we tell everybody, hey, we're going to be at the corner of, you know, Veterans Parkway and Second Avenue, checking people for DUIs, well, then the drunks are going to go another way. And
will they be coherent enough to go the other way?
And so, in that sense, the fact that we set them up on a planned basis, but without saying specifically where we're going to be, is not a point of malice. It's a point of actual effective enforcement.
Right. So. Well, that was one of the concerns, the messaging, and people just felt like that was part of the basis of feeling like certain communities were being targeted because, you know, and I know law enforcement, you have to do your job. And trust me, I think vast majority of people in Columbus support law enforcement. You know, people have the right to be critical, but I think they support them. You spoke about something earlier that I've seen a lot of cross support for. That's body cameras. You know, but people are frustrated when an incident happened and all of a sudden the body cam malfunctioned or it wasn't on. So, you know, in addition to having that technology, what are we doing internally to make sure that we don't have those mishaps during critical situations?
Let me say, and then you say that. That has happened in other communities. If it's happened in the Columbus community, it certainly we want to know about it. But one of the parts when Freddie was saying practices and procedures, and I'm sure some people out there were yawning because practice and procedures sound boring. Mm-hmm. It's those practice and procedures around the body cameras that we purchased can't be manipulated with. Okay. Others are not as fancy, therefore not as expensive. But we said if we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. So, Freddie, if you want to talk about the practice of the...
Right. So when our officers are using body cams, and in doing that, the officer cannot manipulate the body camera in any way other than...
So let's break that down for people listening. So you're saying they can't turn it off?
The only thing the officer can do is turn it on and turn it off. Now, our policy...
Okay.
Our policy is that anytime the officer has an interaction with the public... From a law enforcement perspective, then the body camera must be in the on position.
Why can't the body camera be in the on position the entire time? Well, what's the drawback on that?
Well, we have to take into consideration that the officers throughout their work shift, there are some things that the officer will do that's not going to be a law enforcement function specifically that pertains to them personally.
All right, let's be careful here, because you just said while they're on their work shift,
right,
there may be some things that they do that's personal.
That's correct.
Restrooms.
They may take a break.
I want to just make sure we have it clear. Restroom, okay.
But you know,
take a break.
We don't want body cams peeking in the restroom.
So for that reason, we understand that. So for that reason, that's why our policy reflects that anytime they are interacting with the public, the body camera must be on.
And now, if it's not, even if they're carrying a little old lady across a puddle, mm-hmm. and that camera wasn't on, and something happens, that officer is going to be jacked up for that. Mm-hmm. And so that's what comes into the practices. They're going to be written up for that, even if they were doing the nicest thing in the whole wide world, because that camera wasn't on. And that's the policy they know we're going to be enforcing, so it better be on.
Right, right. And I want to be absolutely clear again. You know, we're just here. I'm conveying questions that I've seen on social media and other people express. And these are questions out of true concern and care, because a lot of law enforcement officers go to church with us. They're our classmates. They're our distant relatives, whether first, second cousins, sisters, and brothers in some mm-hmm. capacities. Even fathers, you know, that have spent years working for the force. So, you know, there's no general hate toward law enforcement. But there are concerns from a segment of the community that feels a certain way. And what's lending to that feeling may not necessarily be the actions of the officers. It could be the result of the environment or a lack of communication. So that's what I'm getting to here, and making sure that we have those conversations, making sure that people are requesting, you know, why are officers not stopping anymore and walking, talking to neighbors? And I understand we have a slight shortage, and we're working on that. But, you know, and again, these are general concerns. I can't give you any specifics. I wouldn't want to speak specifics, because these are things that we would like to see happen, you know, throughout the entire force. Major Blackman, do we have a productive and aggressive community policing plan right now?
Right, that's a good question that you ask. But before I answer that, just want to follow up on the body cam mm-hmm. and understand that body cams, when I was saying as far as the officers cannot manipulate the camera, mm-hmm. the officers cannot download anything, any material, any video that's on the camera. That has to be done by a supervisor.
Okay.
Okay. Now, as far as the body camera also.
So are you saying supervisors only have the technology to do that, or no, it's just a policy they can't do it, but physically they can do it?
No, it's the officers do not have the capability.
The capability. Okay, see, that's different. And I want that to be clear.
The way the cameras are set up, the officers cannot download. They don't have the equipment to do it.
And to be clear, that's for the safety of them and the citizens.
Exactly.
Because if they are in no wrong, we want them to show that they're in no wrong.
And so when I say the supervisor will take the camera and turn it into our technicians. Mm-hmm. The technicians is the one that actually downloads the video there. The supervisors are transporting that body cam each time it's time for a renewed body cam, mm-hmm. that's done. The officers cannot do that. Now, as far as community policing, now that's a great point you brought up, because we have a very good working relationship with our community. We interact throughout our community, all across our community in various capacities.
I'm just curious, what did you base that assessment on? Because I just felt some people rolling their eyes at the radio.
Well, first of all, we have surveys to prove that we have a good working relationship with our community.
Okay.
Earlier, I stated that we are an accredited agency. Mm-hmm. We have community, we invite the community to come in to our police department and communicate whatever concerns they may have.
Good.
And this is done at any time.
Right, right.
At any time of the year, any day.
Okay.
The community can contact me in my office or any police officer if there's ever a concern about any police practice that takes place. Now, we also interact. We have a pastor's academy where we interact with the religious leaders of our community.
And, you know, Los Angeles did a great job of actually interacting with what they considered some OGs and people that are actually on the ground, on the streets. What type of outreach do we have there? Because, you know, I love our religious community and I love our pastors, but they have their limitations.
Well, and with our neighborhood associations, too, I think now we have 80-something neighborhood associations, and we get regular requests for meetings with the neighborhood associations all over Columbus, and we have the beat officer there. Mm-hmm. And so anytime you want, if you're concerned about crime or just policing in your neighborhood, the beat officers go, you'll know his name is gym or whatever,
right,
and get to meet them and get to talk to them. And so we do have a lot of that. When you say kind of stop and talk, well, a lot of times they're of course doing their business, but a lot of times they are very aware of who the neighborhood association president is, who they need to look for to get word out in the community that this is going on or that's going on. And so through the neighborhood associations, the academies, the Citizen Academy, the Pastor Academy, I posed the other day that we should have a DJ Academy. I mean, anybody who wants to get the word out.
I like that thinking.
Yeah.
I like that thinking.
So
absolutely.
You know firsthand.
A Barber's Academy.
Yeah, Barber's Academy.
Beautician Academy. Absolutely.
I would love that.
A Lawn Service Guy Academy who actually is out in the community cutting grass, see things sometimes that may look crazy, know these homes where we have crime circulating. You know, just really reaching out, thinking outside the box. I like that idea,
man. When you understand what they do and how they do it, mm-hmm. you can interact with them in such a much more meaningful way.
Right.
And then when something happens and there's an explosion on Facebook or mm-hmm. social media about roadblocks or whatever, you're able to say, hey, wait a minute, I know this is how it works. This is how we react to it. And I just think it builds a better relationship. And those are the things, as mayor, public safety director, I'm really interested in us doing. And it's been so successful. The two academies we have mm-hmm. have really been wonderful in enriching that relationship. And I think we should replicate it.
In addition to that, we also have the Citizens Law Enforcement Academy, mm-hmm. where citizens can make an application to attend the academy. It's a 12-week program that takes place at our police department where citizens are made aware as to what each entity within our department does on a daily basis, and they have the opportunity to ask questions and have the information presented to them so that they'll be more knowledgeable, and then they will be able to carry that information to others within their community and make them more aware. So when you see mm-hmm. different things that may be taking place, whether it's on TV or social media, wherever it may be, as the citizens are more informed, they will be able to have definitely a strong, knowledgeable understanding
right.
as to what is taking place with your law enforcement agency.
Well, Major Blackman, I just want to stop there and say thank you so much. Thank you not only for your service to the Columbus community, but the amazing group of law enforcement officers that you do work with on a daily basis, and particularly your Office of Professional Standards. Because, you know, what I can tell you, with every profession, you're going to have individuals that will not do right and that are not good. That doesn't mean that the entire team should be demonized.
Exactly.
And I think that's some of the problems that we've seen with law enforcement here lately, is that you've had one or two bad cops that has given everyone a bad image, but you have one or two bad doctors in Columbus, one or two bad lawyers, one or two bad teachers. They're bad people in every profession. So we have to keep that in mind in our conversation. And you got to understand that sometimes passion gets intertwined with criticism.
Yeah, sure.
And things may come out a certain way that people don't mean it that way. It's a genuine concern that just happened to be the way it comes out. But Major Blackman, I know your job is very tough, and I know you do it with the highest level of honor and integrity, as well as the other officers on the force. And I just want to publicly say thank you. And I'm looking forward to greater interactions with the Columbus Police Department and our community, because I do believe only working together will we be able to really minimize some of the issues that we see here in the city. And I want you to come back. I'm going to reach out to you directly, and I'm going to have you back, and you and I are going to have an extensive conversation. But get ready to wrap up here. I got to wrap up with my mayor, Mayor Theresa Tomlinson,
yeah.
and just say, you know, with this being the last year, the last close to 360 something days, how do you want to be remembered?
Wow, I want to be remembered as the mayor that took us to that next level, who opened up the government to all of the people, who mm-hmm. took us from the good old boy system to the people system. You know, seriously, and I got to tell you, when I came in that first day, that first week, and someday mm-hmm. I'll write a book and you'll need to read it, because you wouldn't believe it. But yes, the good old boy system was alive and well mm-hmm. and met me at the door.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of trials and tribulations that I didn't let people see, battles mm-hmm. I fought, accusations made
mm-hmm.
That I was pandering just to the African-American community for their vote, when I knew that this was a train of the future
mm-hmm.
leaving the station, and these folks could get on it or be left behind. And so my, you know, motives were being impugned, but I knew it was essential. And at the same time, of course, folks in the minority community complaining I wasn't doing it enough or fast enough or whatever. And there were some dark days, but I feel like we've delivered it.
Right.
You know, we have, as I said before, you will never put that toothpaste back in the tube. We have awakened the people. They know what their power is. They don't have to go through a political surrogate, whether it be their preacher or their boss or their whatever. You go straight to the mayor. And that's the standard we've set. And so I hope, of all the great things, the ribbon cuttings, the bike trails, the, you know, the neighborhoods we've turned around, Winterfield, whatever, we're working on so hard. I want to be remembered as the woman who took it to the people and left it there.
Well, you know, leadership is hard. I've never served as a mayor, but I served as the national chair of all law students my last year in law school, representing 179,000 law students across the nation at a HBCU law school. So you can imagine how tough that was for me. But, you know, you're not going to make everyone happy, and people will dislike what you do. But you owe it to those who voted for you to stick to your word, to be a person of conviction, a person of trust, a person of loyalty for the reason that they decided to get behind you and support you in your efforts to that position. And one last question. Will we see Teresa Tomlinson in 2020?
You just might.
Okay.
I got to tell you, that's not something I planned for. You know, in retrospect, if I had thought I was going to be an elected office in the future, I would have positioned myself differently to maybe have run for governor, for instance. That was a big thing this time around. But I think people need to know I had my eye on trying to be a good mayor and not looking at what the next thing was. But now as I close out this last year, I think it's appropriate to start looking at, do we still need good leadership? And I got to tell you, every night I watch the news and I say, oh my God, you know.
It's clear. We do need
we need some good leadership. And so that's what I'll be watching is can I serve in that way, or do I need to go back to the law and serve justice?
Right.
You know, I mean, there's two great paths. And so I'll be looking. But I got to tell you, right now, today, I got to run, you know. But if somebody else steps up and the path looks more steady for mankind and for our nation, and I'm not, quote, needed, then I'll go back to loving practicing the law.
Well, Mayor Tomlinson, it's always a pleasure and an honor to have
you
in here and to have a moment of your time to discuss the city of Columbus, our future, and where we're headed. So thank you again. This has been Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese, and you certainly want to stick with us. As you see from this interview here, we are bringing to you, directly to you, the people that move Columbus, the people that make a difference here, and we want you to hear from them, and we want you to feel just like you are a part of this conversation. So I look forward to having you back with me next Sunday on Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese.
The views and expressions of Sunday Conversation are not the views of Davis Broadcasting Incorporation, advertisers, nor their staff.